Thank Brother Galen for those thoughts from Exodus, especially as we looked at the backward look of the Passover, the present look, and the future look. And I was impressed there in this passage in Exodus 12. Then in verse 14 and in verse 17, we have this phrase, forever. And you shall keep the feast forever in your generations. And so, and when Jesus came, he ushered in a new era of time. And he had a new Passover, as it were, that he ate with the disciples. Brother Galen pointed that out from the book of Luke. And so this morning we're here continuing this in our generation. And as we share together in this service, may our hearts be lifted heavenward and again inspired with what Christ has done for us personally. I'd like you to think about what Christ has done for you this morning in a special way. Think about your indebtedness to him. And I like if we could have enough of time after the communion service for plenty of testimonies. So you think about that a while. Last Sunday at Swatara, when I gave opportunity for testimonies, I immediately saw sisters looking over to the men's side. And I reminded them that the sisters can give testimonies too. So you think about that. And we want this day of worship to be inspirational to our own hearts, inspirational to each other as we share together. In our books, we have this song. We're not going to sing it, but it's entitled Into the Woods My Master Went, written by Sidney Lanier. Into the woods my master went, clean forspent, forspent. Into the woods my master came, forspent with love and shame. But the olives that were not blind to him, the little gray leaves were kind to him. The thorn tree had a mind to him when into the woods he came. Out of the woods my master went, he was well content. Out of the woods my master came, content with death and shame. When death and shame would woo him last, from under the trees they drew him last. 'Twas on a tree they slew him last, when out of the woods he came. You may open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 26. I'd like to think this morning about the Jesus' experience in Gethsemane. And there's no way this morning that we can communicate effectively what Jesus endured in Gethsemane. It's beyond our words, it's beyond our imagination, and it's also beyond what anyone here has ever faced. And so I cannot describe this morning to you what Jesus endured. It's beyond anything that you have ever experienced. If you imagine this morning your worst dream, the time that you felt the most alone, a time in your life when you were feeling deep pain, maybe actual physical pain and suffering. Men have described to me things that they've faced physically that I have never faced. But whatever the worst, the most extreme pain and aloneness, physically or emotionally, that we have ever faced, still doesn't describe what Jesus endured. And I want you to think about that as we read this passage and look at a number of points in relation to Gethsemane. That's the title of the message, is simply Gethsemane. Gethsemane. Matthew 26. I would just like to, I think we're going to take the time to read. I like to read through verses 56. And this is broader than just Gethsemane, but I want to think about, look at some of these surrounding thoughts. So we're going to start at Matthew 26 and verse 1. And it came to pass, when Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said unto his disciples, "Ye know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified. Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people unto the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety and kill him. But they said, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar among the people. Now when Jesus was in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, there came unto him a woman having an alabaster box of very precious ointment, and poured it on his head as he sat at meat. But when his disciples saw it, they had indignation, saying, to what purpose is this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for much and given to the poor. When Jesus understood it, he said unto them, why trouble ye the woman? For she hath wrought a good work upon me. For ye have the poor always with you, but me ye have not always. For in that she poured this ointment on my body, she did it for my burial. And verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world, there shall also this that this woman hath done be told for a memorial of her. Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priests, and said unto them, what will ye give me, and I will deliver him unto you? And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time he sought opportunity to betray him. Now the first day of the feast of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus, saying unto him, where wilt thou that we prepare for thee to eat the Passover? And he said, go into the city to such a man, and say unto him, the master saith, my time is at hand, I will keep the Passover at thy house with my disciples. And the disciples did as Jesus had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. Now when the even was come, he sat down with the 12. And as they did eat, he said, verily I say unto you, that one of you shall betray me. And they were exceeding sorrowful, and began every one of them to say unto him, Lord, is it I? Now just going to pause here a little. And I want you to think about, just try to feel what was happening here, at least some of what was happening. Judas had gone out and already covenanted to betray Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. And apparently he came back and mingled in with the disciples and acted like all was well. And there he was, sitting in the group of 12. And Jesus said that one of you shall betray me. Just think about the tenseness of that moment. And how Jesus must have felt. And how Judas must have felt. How wretched he must have felt. And how the other disciples felt as they moved through this. And they were exceeding sorrowful, in verse 22, and began every one of them to say unto him, Lord, is it I? And he answered and said, he that dippeth his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. And that was an expression, as I understand it, it was the deepest expression of love and consideration that a host could give to a guest in their day. And Jesus said, it's he that dippeth his hand with me in the dish. And some of the other gospels say that it's he that dippeth the sop with me. The Son of Man goeth, in verse 24, as it is written of him, but woe unto that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It had been good for that man if he had not been born. And Jesus loved him. Verse 25, then Judas, which betrayed him, answered and said, Master, is it I? He had already done it. And there he looked up and said, Master, is it I? And he saith unto him, thou hast said. And as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed it and brake it and gave to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, Drink ye all of it. For this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. And when they had sung an hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives. Then saith Jesus unto them, All ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you into Galilee. And Peter answered and said unto him, Though all men should be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. Jesus said unto him, Verily I say unto thee, that this night before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And Peter said unto him, Though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee. Likewise also said all the disciples. Then cometh Jesus with them into a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Remember, these were the same disciples that he took with him up to the Mount of Transfiguration. And it's the same place, same Peter that said, Lord, let's just stay here a while. Let's build tabernacles. Well, I guess we could say that here in the garden, Jesus wanted Peter to build a tabernacle, as it were, to just be with him and stay with him. And they were sorrowful and very heavy. In verse 38, then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he cometh unto the disciples and findeth them asleep and saith unto Peter, What, could ye not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to the disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now, take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves, from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he, hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Jesus and said, Hail, Master, and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, Friend, wherefore art thou come? Then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And behold, one of them which were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. Then said Jesus unto him, Pick up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled that thus it must be? In that same hour saith Jesus to the multitudes, Are ye come out as against a thief, with swords and staves for to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and ye laid no hold on me. But all this was done that the scripture of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples forsook him and fled. Gethsemane. So where was this Garden of Gethsemane as we refer to it? Where was this place? What was at the edge of the Mount of Olives? The Mount of Olives lay to the east of Jerusalem. They lay over beyond the Kidron Valley that lay between Jerusalem and this Mount of Olives, it was a small hill, as we would call it today, and it's referred to in the scriptures as the Mount of Olives. It's a place where Jesus often went, and he spent nights there, and he prayed often in this garden, or in this Mount of Olives. And on this night he went to this Garden of Gethsemane. The Garden of Gethsemane was on the western foot of the Mount of Olives. And we don't know a lot about the garden. The word Gethsemane and the Greek word that we have here means oil press. And so it obviously was a Mount of Olives. The Garden of Gethsemane had olive trees, a few olive trees in it as well. And maybe there was a time when there was an olive press there to press out the olive oil. We don't know. Doesn't seem like there's much known about this garden. How big was it? We don't know. Today there's a Garden of Gethsemane that you can go to. And I'm told that there are still various religious groups from various geographic areas that claim that the garden was at other groves there in the area. People don't agree as to where exactly this garden was located. But you know, this morning, it doesn't really matter. Wherever it was exactly, Jesus experienced it. And he went through this pain and the suffering. He experienced the Garden of Gethsemane on this night and bore this pain and this agony for you and I. The garden. There were olive trees there. An olive tree trunk has a very broad trunk. It's often very twisted and gnarled. And olive trees grow to a height of somewhere between 26 and 49 feet. They're not real tall trees, but they're very old trees. And the ancient trees are well over 1,000 years old. They're a very slow maturing tree when grown in the traditional open grove way. Olives begin bearing fruit in the tree's fifth year and have full fruit production in 7 to 8 years after planting. But they tell us that slow-growing olive trees can take 65 to 80 years until they produce a stable, consistent fruit from year to year and reach stable yields. And it's believed that olive trees in the Mediterranean area can be as old as 2,000 years. And so with that, the possibility exists that you can go there today and touch a tree that Jesus touched. Now, Josephus says that in AD 70, when Titus came through, he destroyed all the trees around Jerusalem. And so we're not exactly sure how old the trees are in what's known as or believed to be the Garden of Gethsemane. But 2,000 years. They were very, very old trees. And as they walked into this garden, Jesus told the disciples to just sit here and I'm going to go yonder and pray. And I don't know, today we would think that maybe there were some benches there. I would guess that maybe there was some grass areas and that's where Jesus told them to sit. And so they sat down there in the grass and Jesus was hoping that they would pray. Well, he went yonder and prayed to his heavenly Father. Why was this place so special to Jesus? Well, you know, Jesus didn't have a place called home. And he would often go there. He would spend a night there. And he would spend much time in prayer. Luke 21 and verse 37 tells us in the daytime he was teaching in the temple. And at night he went out and abode in the mount that is called the Mount of Olives. It was a place of quietness and a place of prayer. I like to just think about the agony in the garden. And think about I want to look at some of the surrounding things that happened. And some of the things that contributed to Jesus' agony. You know, when we face some tough times, there's just not one thing that produces that. It's just a compilation and a number of things, number of events in our lives that happened. What was it that caused Jesus the agony in the garden? First of all, Jesus was the Son of Man. He was the Son of God. He knew all things. Because he was the Son of God, he knew what he would face. But he was the Son of Man. He was a man. Jesus got hungry and he got tired. His body ached. I would guess that there were times as Jesus walked the dusty roads of Judea and he went on the rocky paths that there were times he slipped and fell and he bruised his knees. Jesus, today we would say he needed a Band-Aid sometimes. Maybe he, I don't know, did Jesus ever need to go to Med Express for any reason? I don't know. But he was a man. He was a man. He hurt like you and I do when he fell and bruised himself. He was a man. He shied away from pain just like we do today. He was the Son of Man. We'll look at that a little more in a few moments. Secondly, another contributing factor, I believe, was the divided loyalty of his disciples. His disciples were close to him. They were his friends. They were those that went with him, that stayed with him as he went through his various experiences. But especially on this night, the disciples' loyalty to him was divided. Judas had already betrayed him. Judas had left. The chief priests and scribes had assembled together and made an official decision to take Jesus. And I don't know the heart of Judas, and I don't know his thinking patterns, and I don't know what he was thinking. His heart was not in tune with Jesus. His heart was somewhere else. He was a man of indignation. It seems he was a man of maybe some bitterness. He was a man that, as they faced the various challenges and things that had happened, and he immediately, it seems like he cared a lot about money and he cared a lot about the bag. And it was difficult for him, and did he ever connect? Did his heart ever connect with the heart of Jesus? I don't know. It seems like he was a ruthless man. And the chief priests had assembled to make this official decision to take Jesus. We have the little account then of this woman. It's a great woman of faith and worship and adoration. And Jesus told them that she did it for my burial. And then Judas went secretly to the chief priests and asked what the reward would be. And my mind can hardly comprehend that question. He said, "What will you give me if I do this?" You know, sometimes there's boys that are together on a Sunday afternoon and one of them will say, "Well, what are you going to give me if I do such and such a thing?" And they dare him to do it. And it's usually, you know, sort of a ridiculous reward. And sometimes people do things for a little bit of money. It almost seems like Judas went down there. His heart was far from God. And he said, "What are you going to give me if I do this?" So foolish, so ruthless. And so they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And there was an agreement made. You know, the scripture tells us that Satan had entered into the heart of Judas. And there, as Jesus was sat in the garden, and as he prayed, and as he sought the face of God, and as he pled with God that this cup would pass from him, Judas and what he had done was extremely heavy on his heart. Extremely heavy on his heart. But Judas had signed this agreement, and it was as it were, he made a signed a pact with the devil himself. It was done. Do you think Judas ever walked away from that moment and looked back and said, "Why did I do this? How can I get out of this?" They went into this Passover supper. Jesus shared this supper with his disciples. And the mixture of love and sadness, the bittersweetness of the moment, weighed heavy on Jesus' heart. It was a different Passover. It wasn't a merely looking back again, but Jesus was saying, take, eat, this is my body. This is my body, which was broken for you. We could look at the verses in, maybe I'll just do that, in Luke chapter 22, verses 19 and 20. And he took bread and gave thanks and brake it and gave unto them, saying, this is my body which is given for you. This do in remembrance of me. Likewise also the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the New Testament in my blood, which is shed for you. And it was a New Testament. It was a new covenant. And it was this new covenant that Jesus, he wanted to go through this. He wanted to go all the way and give his life blood so that we could have this new covenant. Galen read these verses. With desire I have desired to eat this Passover. And here in Matthew chapter 26, as they sat here at supper and Judas was there, notice how Jesus related to Judas. And he said in verse 21 that one of you shall betray me. And he dipped his hand with him. He showed his love to him and his care of his soul. And Judas said, is it I? And then in verse 26, Jesus took bread and he gave it to the disciples and he said, take, eat. He gave it to Judas. And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, and notice this, drink ye all of it. And I don't know what that phrase meant. It may have, maybe Jesus handed them the cup and said, drink ye all of it. In other words, I want you to empty the cup. Just pass it around and empty the cup. But I think Jesus was saying, drink ye all. Drink ye all. You know, today, dear ones, Jesus had a Passover supper here with his disciples that was different than our communion service. We share together with those that have made arrangements. Share together with saints. 1 Corinthians very clearly says that there's a danger of sharing in this service unworthily. Jesus' supper here, his blood was able to save to the uttermost. I believe at this point in time, I would like to think that Judas still had an opportunity. And as Jesus said, drink ye all of it, Judas shared in that cup. And Jesus was saying, my blood, Judas, is able to save you. Just come. And Judas, the Bible tells us, went out and it was night. He chose to walk away. The pain in Jesus' heart. And so as they walked away from that supper, they walked out across the Kidron Valley, and as they walked along, Jesus shared with them of his death. The disciples somewhere in there had a little discussion about who was going to be the greatest. Think of it. In this moment when Jesus was facing the greatest test of his manhood, of being the Son of Man, those that he loved, those that were going to stay with him, those that had promised to not walk away from him, were fussing about who was going to be the greatest of all things. How much like they are we so many times. And then we have Peter's bold declaration. All these things bared in upon Jesus as he was there in the garden. Thirdly, Gethsemane experience was a time of excruciating physical and emotional fatigue. Jesus knew that he didn't deserve this treatment. He knew what he was going to face, the shame, the pain, the extreme suffering that he would face. We can read stories today of martyrs, those who died for the because they were Christians. And you read their stories, and various times they will talk about looking back to Jesus. He was their example, and the joy that they had of being able to suffer for Christ. But Jesus had no one, no hero to look to. He went through this. He was the first, he was the only one that was God. He was sinless. And yet he was bearing this pain and this suffering. He was the first. God is very kind to us in that, he doesn't show us the details of tomorrow. But Jesus knew and understood what would be tomorrow and the next day. He understood and he knew that. He knew what he would face. We have this English word, excruciating. And I sort of happened across this. I was using this word and I decided to look up the definition. And what I found was really, really interesting. Our English word, excruciating, comes from a Latin word meaning from the cross or crucifixion. And it is a word that in Latin was used, it was a word that was used only to describe the pain of a cross experience, a cross death. And there was no other word. There was no other experience that a man could go through that was so excruciating as the pain of hanging on the cross. And as they hung there, and as a man would hang there from his hands and it would draw his bones together and it would put pressure on his lungs that he was hardly able to breathe. It was a terrible, terrible experience. Excruciating pain. And that's what Jesus knew he would face. Combined with the shame, the mockery. And I believe it's Luke that tells us that uses the word agony. And it's that Greek word agony there that's not used any other time in the scriptures, in the New Testament. It was excruciating pain. Jesus knew he would endure this pain. He knew this shame. Here in Matthew 26 and verse 37, it says that he began to be sorrowful. And this word sorrowful means obvious stress. The disciples could see that there was a weight that was beginning to come over Jesus in a new way. It says he was very heavy, which means extreme distress of mind. In verse 38, it says that he was exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Which means to grieve all around, to be intensely sad. Maybe even to the point of just desiring death. It was an extreme sense of pain and suffering that I believe no other man has ever faced because of all these things that Jesus knew that weighed in upon him. Verse 39 tells us that he fell on his face in prayer. And I can picture Jesus just doing that, just falling down on his face. His physical body was crumbling under the strain and the stress. It was not just an experience where a cultural thing where they would get down and put their face down to the ground in a very dignified way, but Jesus' body just crumbled under the pain and the extreme physical and emotional suffering that he was enduring as he fell on his face in prayer. And verse 44 says, and he left them, and he went away again, and he prayed the third time, saying the same words. Exceeding sorrowful. The scriptures tell us that Jesus sweat, as it were, drops of blood. I'd like to just read something that Kirvin Gordon wrote. You probably remember this from the Pilgrim Witness. But he said this, that the physical suffering of torment of Jesus began in the Garden of Gethsemane. It was in the garden that Jesus, in an agony, entered into prayer in preparation for what was to come. It is significant that this is the only place in the Bible that the word agony is used. The first evidence of Jesus' physical torment is demonstrated by none other than the physician Luke, when he mentioned that Jesus' sweat was, as it were, great drops of blood falling to the ground. And so, for many years, people have discussed that. It says, as it were, great drops of blood. So was it really blood, or was it just great drops of sweat? Looking at it from a medical standpoint, the medical term for this occurrence is hematidrosis, which occurs only in persons who have undergone extreme emotional stress. In this occurrence, the tiny blood capillaries around the base of the sweat glands burst and leak blood into the sweat glands, causing the sweat to be tinged with blood. And so there Jesus, as he prayed in the garden under this extreme emotional load and heaviness, I believe that there was that blood that mingled in with the sweat and matted his face and added to the fact that his visage was marred as he, that all culminated in his death on the cross, and with all the beating and the blood and the agony that he had faced, it bare upon his visage and his facial features. And last of all, Jesus was alone. He was alone. Remember that Jesus was the Son of Man. He was human, and because he was human, he longed for support, especially from those he loved dearly, those he felt close to. In our, maybe it's our German heritage, I'm not sure what it is. Part of it is that as men especially, we like to portray ourselves as being tough and not needing a lot of emotional support and a lot of, we're able to handle things. Sisters' emotions are touched a lot quicker than men's. And they're a lot more interested in heartfelt talks and emotional words of comfort. Men are given more to, we can handle this, and we don't need those endearing words. We can get through this. When Jesus was baptized, a voice came down from heaven that said, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." Jesus needed confirmation in this life. There on the Mount of Transfiguration, we have a similar voice that came out of that cloud. Here in this moment in the garden, as Jesus suffered emotionally, he suffered in agony, and Jesus wanted his disciples to support him. And he was alone. He was alone. He suffered alone. They all were overcome with drowsiness and sleepiness, and not even Peter could support him. Jesus was alone. Think about it when we're alone, what happens? It brings feelings of rejection, being forsaken, brings feelings of fear, and maybe even bitterness, especially when friends forsake us. Jesus could have had feelings of failure. One of his own had walked away from him and even betrayed him alone. But in his extreme pain and sorrow of heart, I believe that Jesus didn't succumb to depression. Because when people are depressed, they want to be alone. Jesus sought comfort. He sought friends. He sought, and he wanted so badly, to be supported by those he loved. He craved their support. And so as Jesus was there in the dark night in Gethsemane, all of earth had forsaken him. And it was only heaven that he could look to anymore. The only comfort he had was that of heaven and the support of a heavenly Father. I'd like to look, in closing yet, at a few lessons, Gethsemane lessons for us. Number one, this morning, as we think about Gethsemane especially, and think about what Jesus has suffered for you and for me, there is no other response than that we should just love him. Love him with our whole heart, soul, and mind and strength. Just love him. Give your all to him. Give your heart to him. There's nothing else, there's no one else that will be able to carry you through the needs of your life. Give your all to Him. He suffered there for you. He agonized in the garden for you. And dear ones, this morning we all forsook Him, didn't we? We all had forsaken Him. Give Him your all. Give Him your best and put Him first in your life. Pattern your life after Him and tell others about Him. Secondly, life is real, isn't it? And life is tough. And we face real challenges in life. We do. We face our own physical limitations. We face our mental limitations. We face our humanity. And the question that I like to ask myself this morning and all of us is, can you watch with Him 1 hour? Can you watch with Him 1 hour today? Can we watch with Him in prayer? Can we watch with Him in commitment? Can we stay with Him? Can we keep our eyes focused on Him as we face the challenges and the temptations of life? Watch with Him in commitment. Watch with Him in obedience. Can Jesus depend on me to be faithful every day? Thirdly, let's truly support those that we commit to help. Peter committed to be there for Jesus, and he left him down. Can we be faithful in helping and assisting those that we commit to? Number four, rest is found through yielding to the will of heaven. And I am so blessed with Jesus. The story, this little account in Gethsemane of Jesus' surrender. And if you look at these words, he said in verse 39, "O my Father, if it be possible, if there's any way out, if it be possible, let this cup of suffering, this cup of shame, this cup of pain, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." And then notice in verse 42, when he came the second time and he prayed this, notice the difference. "O my Father, if this cup may not pass away." You see that Jesus had gone from that point of saying, "Father, isn't there another way?" to saying, "Lord," saying, "Father, I know this is what I need to do. I know this is what has to happen. If this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done." A beautiful step of surrender. And we need to go through that in our own lives in so many areas, don't we? Some little areas, as it were. Some big areas. Surrender. Rest is found through yielding to the will of heaven. And so submitting to the will and call of God isn't easy. Struggling with God's will is not always a sign of rebellion. It wasn't here. Jesus wasn't rebelling against God. When we face some tough disappointments in life, coming to God and struggling through that is not necessarily a sign of rebellion. When we want to know God's will and we're struggling in our human limitations to understand God's will and to know His will, we need to struggle through that. Don't just act like it's not a big deal. It was tough for Jesus. But allow that work of surrender to happen in your heart. Number five, the provision of heaven can carry us through the most trying of moments. Jesus' closest friends disappointed him, but he refused to allow that to distract him and to cause him to turn against God and take his own way. And so when it seems that all earth has forsaken you, look to heaven. Romans 8:35 says, "And who shall separate us from the love of God?" Well, this morning, may the sentiments of Gethsemane linger with us. 1 Corinthians 11 We have here the passage that we want to, we read a few verses here ahead of our observing communion. And I'd like to just turn here and I'd like to read these verses, and then I want to just make a comment on verse 26 as part of the closing thoughts. But he says here in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 23, "For I have received of the Lord that which also I delivered unto you, that the Lord Jesus, the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he brake it, and he said, Take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me. After the same manner also he took the cup, which he had supped, saying, This cup is the New Testament in my blood. This do ye as oft as ye drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as ye eat this bread and drink this cup, ye do show the Lord's death till he come. Wherefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the Lord unworthily shall be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord." And so this morning we're here again to share together in this memorial service. May God help us to feel the sentiments of Gethsemane and what Christ endured for us. And as we share together again this morning, we are doing this, showing forth his death until he come again. And let's continue to look for his coming and remember that he's coming soon. We don't know when he will return to earth, but we believe that his coming is soon. And in Zechariah chapter 14, it tells us that one day again, Jesus will stand again on the Mount of Olives. And he will not be a captive there, but he will be the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and he will reign supreme. And so may we be ready for that time. As we share together in this communion service, for those of you that are members here in this congregation, as we go through this service, as we take the bread, as we take the cup, let's think about what Christ has done.